Welcome to the Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. Thank you for your service.
Welcome back, everybody. It's so good to have you on this fine Friday at Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. I'm super excited. And let me tell you why. You know, the holidays are the best, and we're 1 week out from Christmas, and I love it, man. I love decorating. I love watching old corny movies. I love everything about the holiday seasons. I love seeing my daughter get excited for Elf on the Shelf and all that crap. I know it drives parents crazy. I get it. I do. But I'm an Elf fan. I'm a Santa fan. I love every bit of it. And when I get to sit down with her and read a little story or, sit in front of the fire and talk about the holidays, it just brings my whole world to a whole new level. So I'm picked up. I'm ready to go. And you know what the other great part about the holidays is, and especially for this year after starting Bulletproof Veteran Podcast, is getting a great guest right before the holidays. And let me tell you what, I got it. This week for you, Nick Palmisano. He founded Ranger Up, starred in Range 15. He's a YouTube sensation. His videos get, you know, millions of views and all that kind of stuff. Host of BNN. He's on the show, and he's going to be talking about a lot of different things. But one of the things that he really is going to focus on is his new media company, Diesel Jack Media. And really what he's doing for small businesses, large businesses, but really to generate buzz for these businesses and really help them step up their game and get to the next level of earnings. He talks a lot about how it's so important that we support our small businesses and what it means when you talk about this war, this economic war that we have with China, and the importance of small businesses and the role that they play. And Nick is really trying to help out in this, you know, kind of arena, and it's his mission to help these guys out. So really looking forward to you guys taking a listen to this one. He's just a really interesting guy. He's got a great history. He took a lot of chances in life. And I always like having guests on to take chances and go after their dreams. And Nick is definitely somebody that did. But before we get to him, please like us on Facebook, Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. Follow us on Instagram, Bulletproof Veteran. Take a look at our Twitter page, Bulletproof_Vet. You can also check us out on YouTube, Bulletproof Veteran Podcast, and also on Rumble at Bulletproof Veteran Podcast. As always, use coupon code Bulletproof at StrikeForceEnergy.com. For all your energy drink needs, let me tell you, it is the best product on the market. No crash, zero sugar, awesome flavors. Check out their orange. I'm telling you, it's the best. But, you know, if you want to check all of them out, they got a four-pack. You can check it out. They got the lemon, lime, the grape, the original, and the orange. You can get them all in one shot. You be the judge. Like I said last week, awesome beverageware too. Their tumblers are great. If you need a water bottle or something like that, they have one that hooks on with a carabiner. They have one that is just a regular top. Great products over there. So head on over to StrikeForceEnergy.com. Get your last minute Christmas gifts using coupon code Bulletproof for 20% off. I think that's it, boys and girls. I think we're going to get right into this week's interview so you guys can enjoy all the information that Nick is going to be just throwing at you. So sit back, relax, grab a beer, and enjoy this week's interview. All right, everybody, we are back this week, and I got a special one for you. Nick Palmisano, you might know him from YouTube. You might know him from Ranger Up. Hell, you might know him from Range 15 if you like your movies and that kind of stuff. But he's on the show to talk about a whole bunch of stuff with us today. And we're really honored to have you on, Nick. Thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, man. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, it's awesome to have you. And listen, I usually start off by letting people just tell a little bit about themselves. And listen, you got a big future, so we could go on for a long time with that. But real quick, brief, you know, where'd you come from? How'd you get started? All that kind of fun stuff.
Sure. So I was born in Providence, Rhode Island. but I grew up in Italy. My dad is an Italian immigrant, but after serving in Vietnam, he ended up working civilian side DOD, and he had the opportunity to bring us over there. So my formative years were all, Italian.
And what base were you at?
I was in Naples.
Oh, Naples. Nice.
Yeah. But we lived on the economy because, again, my dad, he's an American citizen, but, he is Italian. So he was very comfortable, living on the economy. So we were basically the only Americans living amongst, real Italians, not in a caserne or anything. So for all intents and purposes, I was an Italian kid. And then I came back to the States, and of all places, I moved, outside of Boston, where, anybody that knows Massholes, it's a tough place to grow up, period, because it's a lot of ball busting. But I was the weird kid that spoke Italian. So basically spent the first few years back in the States getting my ass kicked, hated it, missed Italy. And that's why I started combat sports. I'm old. So at the time, Karate Kid 2 had just come out. And I wanted to do karate, but the closest karate place was 45 minutes away. My mom was like, you could do judo. And I was super disappointed, but it ended up being a formative moment in my life because mm-hmm. judo is awesome. So judo led to wrestling. Wrestling led to, looking for harder things to do. That led to West Point and military service. Spent 6 years as an infantry officer. Nothing special. I'm a pretty regular dude, so you're not going to ever hear me, tell anything other than funny stories about my service. Left the service to, I really didn't know what I wanted to do, but I ended up in business school at Duke University. Then got a corporate gig at a Fortune 100 company. Hated it, was making a ton of money, was doing everything I thought would make me happy, was absolutely miserable, started a hobby to reconnect with the military, the culture. I just missed being around, people that shared my values and missed having a mission that meant something to me. And so, I started Ranger Up purely as a hobby. I wish I had this cool entrepreneurial story where I had this vision of something greater, but it straight up was this'll be fun. I always, I liked, wacky t-shirts. I had piles and piles of, weird t-shirts from different sites. And I was yeah, cool. I'll make my own t-shirts. And started writing articles and stuff. And then next thing it started becoming what I spent all my time on. And I was getting emails from Iraq and Afghanistan, this is awesome, man, almost immediately after I started this thing, I met Tim Kennedy. And Tim Kennedy, he wasn't there the day we started it, but he was almost there the day we started it. And we hit it off right away. We did this charity. I was doing this charity thing with Maxim magazine, raising money for the Wounded Warrior Project before it got weird, back when it was a really pure organization.
Yeah. Before there was a little bit of fallout and what's.
Yeah. Yeah. And they've recovered. I'm not bagging on, them, but before things got weird, mm-hmm. When they were a startup, this was 2007, January, 2007. We were doing this photo shoot, and the guy that was running all of the combatives programs back then, this guy Greg, and he's the guy that created this, SOCP, if you know anything about kind of the combatives program and SOF, Greg Thompson was I called him up and I'm like, hey, do you have any guys that can do this photo shoot? And he was like, yeah, I got this one guy, Tim Kennedy. Do you know him? And I was a hardcore MMA guy because of judo. Mm-hmm. Because when Hoist Gracie went out there and like started tapping everybody in UFC one, I was like, he's doing judo. Because judo and Brazilian jiu-jitsu are they have different focuses, but it's really the same sport.
Right.
And so I was like, man, this is awesome. Like the judo guys going out there and killing everybody. And then later it was like, this is jiu-jitsu. And I'm like, all right, call it whatever you want, but you know, it looks like judo to me. And so, you know, I knew Tim already because he had just come out about a year earlier in the top 10 for all middleweights. Mm-hmm. He wasn't in the UFC. This was just like, when he was fighting out of California. And so he came out, and I basically busted his balls the whole time. And he was like, who the hell is this guy? You know? And, because of that, we hit it off. And shortly thereafter, you know, he became a part of the company, and this is before anybody knew who he was. And then he went on, you know, he won the Army Combatives Championship, started building his reputation, and, you know, eventually became the guy he is today. But that's how, you know, Ranger Up started. And I became like a real entrepreneur when I found out I was getting a promotion. And like, when I tell you, like, I was making a lot of money as a very young person, like, I don't come from wealth. My family is very, you know, my family was very poor, and they worked their butts off and became middle class, but like they grew up poor. I didn't see any of that because they worked hard, but like my dad was an immigrant. My mom's dad came back from World War II, and alcohol did not help him, and he died very, very early. And so like, she had six kids by herself, very, very Catholic, wouldn't remarry. So they both were very, you know, they grew up hard. So, you know, all of a sudden I'm like 30 and I'm making a lot of money. And then I find out that that I'm getting promoted, and my promotion was going to be $100,000 raise.
That's serious.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to.
With your background, that's serious. When your promotion is $100,000.
Yeah, it was a big deal, and so I found that out on a Friday, and I just came in on Monday and I quit because it was the first time in my life that I hated my life. You know, when I was in high school, it was like, I was, you know, I was wrestling and I was working towards something, and I was working to get into college and I was improving myself. And then I was at West Point and I got tested in ways that I didn't know possible. And then I got through that. And then I'm in the military, and, you know, it's Ranger school, and it's all the different schools that, you know, infantry guys have to go through. And then you're in a unit, you know, and that's a challenge, like learning how to be a decent platoon leader and not be a douchebag and be effective. And then it's deployment. And then it's like, you know, you start stacking these things and they're all valuable. And like, you feel like you're progressing. And then, you know, Duke University, like I make fun of it a lot, but you know, that's where I started learning business, you know? And for me, Duke was less about like learning book stuff, because I honestly think business school, whether it's undergrad or grad school, is like the easiest major you can do. Like it's not hard. Like I think that like, if you have almost any other major, it's harder. So like I was an engineering undergrad. So I get to business school and people are like, the math in this course is hard. No, it isn't. Like,
it's not.
This is really basic shit. Yeah. So, you know, but I got there, it wasn't about the learning. It was about, meeting other people that had been in business and learning the language and learning how they thought about things, because it wasn't how we thought about things, you know, even like their leadership classes, you know, like business leadership classes were like comical, because they were trying. It wasn't like, how do I, become like an effective leader. It was more about what strategies can I employ to like get people to do what I want to do, you know, but very like, you know, I don't know. I know that's to some people that is leadership, but like, it was weird to me. but understanding kind of how business thinks, how business works, speaking the same language, I think, was important, you know? So I felt like I was progressing there. And then, you know, the first year or two in a Fortune 100 company still felt like I was learning stuff. But then, like, after the first couple of years, it was like, I think I'm just making PowerPoints every day. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm making PowerPoints. I'm making Excel sheets. I'm pitching ideas. Nobody's going to execute these ideas because, you know, large corporations favor no risk. You know, like, if you take a chance on something and it fails in a corporation, you're basically done. You don't really get a second chance, you know? Right. So no one wants to do anything. And I really felt like, man, like, you know, looking around, a lot of happy people. I worked in a great company, but I was like, would I be happy if I was 65 years old retiring from this? And again, no judgment, like, everybody should do what they want to do. But for me personally, that was the most horrifying moment of my entire life. And so I was like, if I take this money, you know, if I start really suckling the corporate teat, I'm not going to be able to get off it because it's too much. Mm-hmm. So I went from making a lot of money to paying myself, I think, I can't remember now if it was $1,000 a month or $2,000 a month, and trying, you know, and jumping full force into trying to make Ranger Up a thing.
So, and you did.
I did.
I mean, you did.
But it was,
I mean,
but
you
it was
were.
Hard.
I'm sure. I mean, but, you know, when you look back at it now, you kind of were the first military brand,
yeah,
you know, that was not just, hey, I made a t-shirt. You guys had more to it. You know,
yep,
you had the YouTube side of it as things went on. You know, you know, 06, 07 probably was still a little bit in the infant stages of it. But as you guys progressed, I remember watching videos when I got out of the military, Veterans Inner Monologue.
Yep.
One of my favorites. And you know, I'm not blowing smoke up your ass. I just remember watching it going, yeah, I've wanted to say a couple of those things. Maybe not everything. Listen, I was a mechanic. I wasn't a combat veteran. But I remember being in a shop or talking to somebody in my new job and going, man, if you only knew what it was like to, you know, be really treated like shit, say.
Yeah. Yeah.
You wouldn't be complaining right now because we asked you to fill out this form.
Yep. Yeah. You know? So one of the big things that, like, that I harp on a lot, and I get crap for it, but I don't care anymore because I'm old. is like, you know, it's when you're in, you know, 100%, like, everybody busts each other's balls about, you know, like, oh, I'm infantry, I'm cav, I'm this, I'm that, you know, but, like, what I found since I got out, and I encourage people all the time, is, like, you know, veterans are such a small percentage of the community. You know, we're, mm-hmm, we're, you know, 0.45% of the population in terms of, like, the current generation of veterans. So, you know, veterans,
yes,
since people that have gotten out since 9/11 is 0.45, maybe it's 0.5 now. The last time I did the math, it was 0.45. Tiny percentage of the population. So, you know, if you keep trying to dice that up and keep trying to cut it down more, then we are going to have even less of an effect on the community. And, like, I really think that's a major issue that's coming that we as the veteran community haven't even thought about yet. So, mm-hmm, so if you think about, you know, World War II, 11% of the population served. Vietnam, 4.3% of the population served. So now you're talking about wars that have gone on 20 years and we're not even at 1%. So we're at half of 1%. So think about what that means. Fast forward 20 years, right? The World War II vets are gone. They're not an influence on society anymore, which is, you know, it's awful, but it's true.
It's true.
You know, my dad is he's a Vietnam vet. You know, he's in his 70s. There are fewer and fewer Vietnam vets, you know, in politics, in business, right? So now, you know, if you really think about, like, who's left to have voting power, business power, political power. We're talking about, you know, Desert Storm and us. And think about when the Vietnam generation dies off, we go from having this substantial, you know, foothold in society to having no voting power, mm-hmm. significantly decreased political power, significantly decreased business power. And so, you know, I tell people now, like, look, you know, if you want to keep cutting up each other and putting people down or attacking veterans because they have a different political viewpoint than you have, like, man, like, isn't it better to have representation of people that know what it's like whether or not you deployed, like, just know what it's like to wear a uniform and to serve and to, you know, like, to know what, you know, who the people are. And it's not this faceless entity when you say, like, oh, we're going to Syria, we're going to whatever. It's like, you know, again, when I was in the military as a young person, I felt very old. But, you know, now sitting here, you know, I'm 43, you know, my stepson is literally in ROTC right now.
It's crazy, right?
and like, you know, and he's, you know, he's going infantry, and, you know, like, and I'm weird because I tried to talk him out of it. Like, I wasn't like, you know, oh yeah, it's the best, you should do this. I'm like, mm-hmm. here's how they're going to screw you. It's not what you think. It's going to be, you know, like, and I, you know, I told him all the horror stories, and, you know, but he's going to go out there and he's going to be, yeah, you know, he's going to be a trigger puller. And, yeah. you know, and I'm sitting here going, man, I hope we don't deploy, but, you know, that doesn't seem to be the way we do things anymore.
I know.
And so, yeah. you know, so we're sending kids to me now. And I don't mean to, I'm not trying to disrespect people for being younger, because that was me. But, like, as somebody that's 43, I'm like, if we're going to send kids to do something, like, it, there better be like a good reason. So, like, you know, this group of people comes out, and we all did this job, whatever our job was, and we know, we have a sense of service. At one point, you know, we all felt a certain way about the country. Like, when you get out, like, you kind of have two choices. Like, you know, it's either, like, we're either a collective, or you spend, like, the rest of your life, you know, wearing your letterman's jacket, you know? And like, I really think that's the most dangerous thing. And I think that's how guys end up committing suicide. I think how that's how guys become unhappy, become, you know, like, the military has to be a thing that you did that is a foundation for who you are. It cannot be your personality. And I realize, like, you know, some people find that ironic because, you know, like, I essentially went into, you know, an adjacent place for the military. But if you look at my life, like, I don't live my life like I am, you know, the ultimate veteran dude, whatever. Like, that's not how I live. People don't, a lot of people in my, you know, that I interact with, like, didn't know I was a vet. Like, it's not a thing that I, you know, I talk about all the time. When you see the content that I put out, it's not, you know, it's content that helps veterans, or that kind of, like, it's fun to be a veteran, but, like, I don't try to diminish being a civilian or becoming a part of civilian society, because we're all civilian. Like, I'm not, you know, a veteran is still civilian. Like, I don't serve anything now. I'm a civilian.
Right. Right.
So like, it's my job now to be a good civilian, not to sit around and go, like, I'm better than you people because I did this thing once a long time ago and haven't done shit since, you know, like, it's a mentality that you can't live in the past. Super proud of my service. Would do it again. You know, proud that, you know, that I have a kid that's going and doing it, but, like, it's a moment in time.
Yeah. You can't, like you said, it can be a foundation. It can be part of your story. Don't let it be your whole story, because then, like you said, you get into that trap of being 50 years old wearing the high school Letterman
yes.
jacket. That is a great description of it, because I think you see it a lot. You really do, you know, and it's a pitfall. It's something that can really trap you in a bad place. Whereas if you get out, you say, hey, listen, I learned all these things in the military. I had a blast. I met great people. I still want to connect with those people, but now I want to do X, Y, and Z. I want to start a clothing company, or I want to start a podcast, or I want to do YouTube videos, or, you know, whatever that is. It can still be veteran centric.
Yep.
But it's something you're, like you said, now you're a civilian doing it. You now you're part of your community. Maybe you're bridging the gap between veterans and non-veterans, which is a very important thing. I don't feel like we have enough people bridging that gap, because when you talk about the amount of us that are going to be left, say in 10, 15 years, how many veterans are going to be left? If you're not interacting with non-veterans, there's not enough of us to get anything done. I work with an organization for a base that I was deployed at there. It's a toxic exposure organization. Only 10,000 people were ever at this base. 4,000, that was the only base that they were at. So when you go to Congress to pass legislation and things like that, you're telling a congressman, yeah, there's 10,000 of us. That's nothing.
Yep.
That's not even a blip on the radar for these people.
Yep.
And when you talk about having to spend money for 10,000 people, the first reaction, they'll laugh at you. But if you have the community behind you, if you have civilians, non-veterans, all pushing, saying, hey, no, this is important. Now you have voting power. Now you have a process. So I agree with you. I definitely do. And I think that's kind of what you guys have done with Ranger Up, with YouTube, with BNN, and now with your new media company.
Yep.
You know, I think you're helping bring some of that veteran mindset to all of these organizations. Talk to me a little bit about Diesel Jack Media. I know it's your newest thing. What are you guys trying to do? I mean, your tagline is awesome. You're going to need to make people hate you is right on your website. Kind of catches your eye. I mean, that, and if you're a media company, that's what you want. But what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So Diesel Jack Media started for a few reasons. The first reason is the same reason that I left John Deere to start Ranger Up is part of the reason why I started Diesel Jack Media. Like, life is extremely short, and there is nothing worse than regret. And I was starting to feel stagnant. You know, a couple of years ago, Ranger Up took venture money, and we grew a lot, and it was pretty wild. But along with that came, you know, I no longer had to run a 25,000 square foot warehouse in North Carolina. Now, you know, we have a couple hundred thousand square foot warehouse in Columbus, Ohio, with, you know, machines printing 24/7. But that's not my job. You know, like, my job became purely marketing, design. And you get to a point where you just want to do other stuff. So that's the first reason is I started going, you know, like the last, like I really enjoyed doing Range 15. That was the first big challenge I had in years in terms of something new, you know? And that, like, you know, really, really got me moving, like really got me pushing myself. You know, I killed myself to, you know, as did the rest of the team to make that movie. And it was invigorating. And so since that movie, I've thought a lot about, you know, what do I want to do? So the second part is, for years, I have spent a lot of time helping veterans build companies. You know, a lot of, you know, people will call me, like I spent hours on the phone with people, you know, and, you know, helping guide them to success so they avoid the pitfalls that, like, I've made. I've made a lot of mistakes as an entrepreneur, very painful ones at times. And, you know, and my wife is like, why don't you just do this? You know, because you love it. You love helping people. And you always get frustrated, like, when people don't listen to you. It's like, you know, when you spend time with them, like, why don't you make this your job? And, you know, people tend to listen to you when they're paying you. And I was like, well, that, you know, that's interesting. Like, that's something that, you know, I'd kind of never thought about, which is weird, I know, but, like, you know, she's smarter than I am. So it, you know, it helps. And then it was just, you know, I just started thinking about it more. And I had had a situation where I had worked with an agency, because sometimes you just don't want to do things. And you're like, man, rather than, like, hire people to do this, like, you know, let me try to hire an agency. And I've hired 5 agencies and, you know, 1 little one and 4 with really good reputations that are supposed to be, you know, best in class or whatever. And all 5 of them did jack shit. Like, they did. Can I swear on this podcast?
You definitely can.
Okay. They did fucking nothing for us.
Yeah.
You know, like, they'd give us these reports like, oh, we made you 400%, but revenue didn't go up. You know, profit didn't go up. Like, there was no measurable way of saying these guys did a goddamn thing. And it was really
frustrating. They took your money.
They took it. Yeah. And
they take your money.
You kind of don't hear from them until, you know, the contract's almost up. And then all of a sudden they're everywhere.
Right.
And so, you know, I kind of came up with this, you know, I know it sounds really simple, but the model is I want to build an agency that can do, you know, awesome work for a lower price than it would cost to hire, you know, the same number of people that could do the job. And I want to actually deliver what we say we're going to deliver. And so instead of billing hourly, or instead of billing like a, you know, a percentage of sales or a percentage of, you know, whatever, ad spend, everything that we do is based on deliverables.
Okay.
So if you sign a contract with us, it's like, we will deliver this many pieces of content, this many videos, this many designs, this many, PR stories placed, this many, like, it is, these are the numbers we will deliver, and here's the timeline. Mm-hmm. And that's how we work. So if you sign a 3-month agreement with us, a 6-month agreement, whatever you want, you're getting, you know, every week you're getting something. Every week you're seeing output. Our team is literally compensated based on your performance. So, like, if you win, they get a bigger bonus.
Right. Right.
It's like everything, all the incentives are aligned to you as the client succeeding. And we've basically been able to significantly improve everybody we're working with. We haven't lost anybody yet.
That's
so
great.
So most companies are three to four times bigger than when they signed with us, and we've only been in business 9 months.
And even that contract idea that you spoke of just a minute ago is a little different. Mm-hmm. You don't do long contracts. You're doing 3-6 months. You're allowing a little bit more flexibility with that. Instead of getting locked into, hey, you're stuck with us for 2 years. We're going to market you over this period of time. And when you get to the end of the 2 years, if we did it, great. If we didn't, well, you were already locked in and you weren't going anywhere anyway.
Yep. Yeah. And, you know, some people want a long contract just because that's how their organizations work. For most people, you know, we just ask that you work with us for 3 months, because it takes 3 months to kind of spin up, run some experiments and get it right. But in reality, in 30 days, we've probably made a significant difference in your business. That's been pretty consistent. By day 30, we've made an impact, and one that it's not us telling you, it's you going, oh shit, like, man, like, that, this is a lot different.
Yeah.
You know,
now do you focus mostly on, you were listing some of the services that, that you provide, but are you focusing mostly on kind of YouTube ads, things like that, where it's more video based or something like that? Or are you kind of doing events, you know, like you said, in more of the PR space? How do you, or do you more curtail it to each individual company?
Yeah. So we're a full service marketing organization. We're growing fast. So we have a lot of capability. Most people are paying us to run ads, you know, Facebook, Google, YouTube, to create content. So whether that's static content like ads, memes, or video content, you know, our video content ranges from, you know, make some potentially viral, you know, social media shorts with like good production quality, but like it's, you know, it's something that we're filming internally on site, to people that are paying us to do some crazy stuff where we're, you know, we're renting lenses and we're, you know, we're, you know, props and costumes and like, you know, like a real production,
right?
You know, for like a, television commercials, whatever. Most people are paying us for those things. We build websites. We run PR. We can do pretty much anything. But most people are paying us to basically grow their business.
Right, right. And you guys are growing with it as it kind of moves along, like you said.
Yeah.
You know, so you're probably undertaking more and more and bigger projects. And listen, yeah, you kind of have the experience. I mean, you co-wrote Range 15.
Mm-hmm.
You were a producer on Range 15.
Yep.
You were a producer on Not a War Story. So you kind of have this background now that maybe you didn't have 20 years ago.
You know,
to do larger, bigger things.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. And a lot of people forget about the Rhino Den. The Rhino Den was the first like really successful military, you know, kind of news site.
Yeah.
And then like big money kind of got into it, and you got like the Tasks and Purpose the Rhino Den was never supposed to be a news site. It was always meant to be like a place for veterans to tell stories and kind of, you know, so we have a lot of history in writing.
Right.
You know, right now, Tim Kennedy and I are writing his book. That should be out, you know, kind of probably Q2 next year. Mm-hmm. I've been writing that. I'm working on another project with, I'll keep it quiet for now, but I'm writing a film project right now.
Very cool.
We have a lot of experience, you know, in all of these things, but more importantly, we have experience doing it in a way that actually makes people money. Mm-hmm. And that's like a thing that's unique about Diesel Jack is, three founders, well, four founders. So like a lot of times I shouldn't do it, but a lot of times, like when I'm talking about, you know, my wife and I, like I kind of like bucket us together, 'cause it's like a team. But, Suze and I, and then, Albert and Jeff and between the four of us, I think we've founded 12 companies, you know, and like either built and still run or exited, you know, 12 different companies. And so it's not like when you go to a marketing firm and it's like you're talking to, And I'm not attacking people because of age. Like there's no, like, you know, there are 25-year-olds that have done more than I have. So it's not about that, but you know, you're more often than not, you're talking to a 20-something that has never had P&L responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
You know, throwing around numbers, you know, throwing around, you know, whether it's something, you know, on the smaller side, like $3,000 or $4,000, or something on the larger side where it's like, you know, $100,000 or something. They're throwing around these numbers like they know what it means to actually spend that, you know, and they don't. They've worked in an organization that collects money, that, you know, works 9 to 5, that spits out PowerPoints, and like there is no responsibility. Whereas like when I'm looking at a guy and I know that, you know, he has fought to get his company to the point where maybe he can hire an agency. If I can't look him in the eye and say, based on what you're showing me, I can make a difference, I don't want to sign that person.
Right.
Like, I have told multiple people, hey, I like where you're at right now, this is what I would do. Because, you know, it's not worth a gamble until you get to this point where like you never want to be gambling on an agency where like if they don't deliver, you know, it's going to kill your company, you know, or it's going to take money out of your pocket where like you could have been paying yourself something. Like there's got to be some, there has to be some balance of that risk. So if I don't see a clear pathway to success, if I'm not excited about their project, I don't want to do it because I want to make sure that we can drive people to success. Now, it's different. Sometimes we have clients that are, you know, they have a ton of money. They're doing very well. And they're like, hey, we want to try some new shit. We don't care. That's a different situation. And it's like, yeah. All right, this guy is, you know, or this woman is telling me like, this is their play money. They want to see if there's something there. But when it's a small business, when it's somebody that's like, that's been fighting hand, you know, hand over fist to just make it, like there has to be a pathway to success. And it's weird to me that so many companies are willing to say, yeah, like we're going to make a difference when they know they're not going to do shit.
You know, and you're just going to waste that money.
You're going to waste that
money. They're never
going
to get that back. They're never getting that back.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, we lay things out for people. We give a lot of advice that's outside of the purview of what people are paying for. Like, you know, the biggest challenge when you own a product-based business is inventory. Mm. That every single time Ranger Up got in trouble, every single time. And it got in trouble a few times over the years. It's always been inventory. Because there's this balancing act between having enough to sell, but not having so much that all your cash is on the shelves.
Yeah.
And it's easy at first because the numbers are small. Like when people, you know, but when you start talking about moving millions of dollars of shirts, you know, or having, you know, a seven-figure month, then it really starts mattering, you know, what's on the shelves. And you know, one of the things that's been easier for guys recently is that there's so much direct to garment. You know, Ranger Up uses largely a direct to garment model now. But for years, you know, everything was on the shelves. Uh-huh. And so like, you know, I can tell people, you know, this is my forecast for what you're going to do during the holidays. You can believe me or not believe me, but this is my guess. This is what you should have. And then, you know, that because I've done this a while, I get closer than they're going to be able to in their third or fourth year, you know, without working with us, you know. So like it's little things like that where I think I've been able to help business owners avoid, you know, some of the real painful mistakes I've made. And that's one of the fun parts about doing this is like watching a company that does, you know, like, you know, $6,000, $10,000 a month, suddenly be doing $40,000 a month going, oh shit, like, how did this happen? You know? And they start getting to make cooler decisions. It's not, you know, how do I make it another month or how do I get in front of more people? It becomes, you know, now it's like guys that earlier, you know, 9 months ago would have been thrilled to have 1 month where it was like $20,000 are now like, how do I break a million next year? Well, that's easy. Here's the playbook. you know, it's fun. It's super fun for me. Like, and I think when things are fun, when you're doing what you love, work becomes a lot easier. Not, you know, I definitely blow off people that are like, if, you know, if you love what you do, you know, you won't work a day in your life. That's bullshit. Like work, you know, there are, work is hard. Otherwise we wouldn't get paid for it. But, it does, you know, I get excited. Like I wake up as I'm driving to work, I am excited about like, I'm going to do this today. Like I'm going to get this done for this client today. You know, I can't wait to shoot this video. You know, right now the team is down the street at a fire station, you know, shooting a video for, you know, a new client we have, small business. They're a coffee company. They're not, it's not a veteran coffee company. Even though one of the founders is a veteran, but, you know, they're firefighters. You know, they had to build up to the point where they could work with us, where they could, you know, hire somebody to do video. And like, they're crazy excited about it.
I'm sure.
You know,
I'd be thrilled.
Yeah. And so, you know, like they got here and, you know, they had professional photographers immediately taking pictures of them against a green screen, you know, so that we can build content. You know, now, like, you know, there's, you know, the team is down there, multiple cameramen, PAs, you know, like, every, you know, it's like they're getting treated the way a client should be getting treated. And again, like I paid some agencies a lot of money and not once did anybody treat me that well. And I just always think about that. Like, you know, I never want somebody to go, man, you screwed me. Like I want people going like, holy shit. Like you really went above and beyond. It feels good. You know, I feel that, you know, we're in a different kind of war right now. Everybody's still talking about the global war on terror. And obviously, you know, that is important. But the real war we're in right now is an economic war with China. And everybody, you know, the one thing the Trump administration has done that I think is particularly good is elevated the notion that China is a problem. And basically to stay ahead of China in terms of GDP, we need to add 5 million jobs a year. And jobs do not get added by big business. Like there's a few, you know, Amazon is adding a lot of jobs right now. But if you actually look at big business on the whole, it doesn't really increase because big business is, their motivation is return to the shareholder. So to return to the shareholder, you need to either grow revenues or cut costs. And typically, you know, on an annual basis, companies try to do both.
Of course. And
so that means fewer employees as a collective, or at least fewer employees as a function of revenue. Small business is trying to grow. Small business people take pride in hiring. It's a big deal hiring your first employee, maybe the biggest deal in the entire time that you run business, hiring that first employee, like you feel like a real business. And you know the people. So you're well aware that if you fail, you know, you're putting families, you know, you're taking away money from individuals, from families. People are relying on you. And so, you know, small business, depending on which study you look at, accounts for between 75 and 100% of all job growth in America. Yep. So, you know, to me, every time that I help a small business hire an employee, I have contributed, you know, in a meaningful way to that 5 million.
And that war.
And it's a real war because if we're not the hegemon and China is, the world is a different, not nicer place.
Of course. Yeah. And even just, you know, from a local perspective, my father was a small business owner. And he said to me so many times, exactly what you just said, he cared about that employee when he hired them. He cared that they got a paycheck every week, even if it meant he couldn't take a paycheck.
Oh, yeah.
He made sure they got paid.
Yes.
He made sure that, you know, it was a construction company. So if they didn't have a job to go to that day, he'd have them work at his house and say, listen, you're still going to get a pay. I'm not going to send you home. You're going to work because I don't give money out for free, but I'm going to have something for you to do.
Yep.
And it was the core of what his business stood for in our community. And I fear that by this destruction of small business that we have going on, especially with COVID and all of that, I mean, here on Long Island, I'm a New York guy. I'm from Long Island. The restaurants around here, you're just seeing them close. And
yeah.
Restaurants provide so many jobs, especially when you look at women in the economy.
Yep.
Especially single mothers. There's been some studies that have put out that restaurants are one of the number one employees to single mothers. You know, people that can't miss paychecks, people that can't miss that service that night.
Yep.
Those businesses are closing down or they're cutting back. And if we don't help them, if we don't figure out a way to get them through this just horrible time in this horrible year.
Yes.
Those businesses aren't coming back.
Yep.
They're done.
Yeah. And there's nobody fighting for small business. Like politicians play lip service to it. But the problem is, like, you know, that mom and pop shop, those restaurants you talked about, they don't have a lobby.
No.
You know, like they don't have somebody knocking on, you know, Senator so-and-so's door saying like, hey, Nick, you need to do something for small business. Like you even look at like the PPP loan, it's a good idea, but it was woefully underfunded. You know, it was hard to get, you know, most of the businesses that successfully got it were larger, you know, because they had accountants immediately working on it. You know, it's like,
they knew how to work with the banks. They knew how to sidestep certain regulations to get higher up in line to get that money before.
It was like nuts. Right. And so, you know, it's going to be very interesting to see, you know, what happened. Like, you know, we are taking a hit for a number of reasons that most countries aren't taking,
mm-hmm.
you know, and like, you know, I blame the administration. I blame Congress. You know, to some extent, I blame us, you know, but, you know, if we don't rebuild this small business, like it is going to be a very hard path forward. And so, you know, to me, again, sense of purpose is important, you know, and like, yeah, we all want to get paid. Like, and I think one of the things that is really important for people, because whenever I see a veteran succeed, and it's happened to me, but I see it more for the, you know, like I was more high profile when I was younger. I'm not as interested anymore in going viral. When it happens every once in a while, mm-hmm. it's cool, but like it doesn't affect my life.
Right.
But the guys that are still, you know, that are younger, that are entertainer style veterans, when they succeed, it's always interesting to see how many people are chiming in, like, you know, you just do this for the money. You just do this, you know, like if you really cared about veterans, then you would. And it's funny because like, it doesn't even matter. It doesn't matter how much they do. It's never enough for these people. You know, so like, you know, I mean, you know, pick your poison, right? Like, you know, Ranger Up has over the time it's been in business has given, I think it's like seven figures to, you know, to charities, to veteran organizations, to, you know, Black Rifle Coffee, like same thing, like, you know, they're a, you know, a huge successful company that has done a lot for the community. But just like pick any brand, any veteran brand, and because it's veteran and they are successful, there are a bunch of people that are like, you know, almost shaming the veteran for being successful, for making money in a business. And it's like, hey, wasn't Isn't this the whole point of business?
Of course.
Like, isn't this the whole fucking point, guys? Like,
yeah.
Like, so, you know, I tell people, yeah, absolutely. I want to make millions of dollars. Absolutely. If you don't make money, if you don't take care of yourself, you can't take care of your family. You can't take care of others. You can't do charity work. Like, and I've gone that route. Like in the beginning, it was like, I don't care about making money. I, you know, it just has, like, I just want to give back to the community. It's not sustainable. It creates stress in your personal life that makes you worse at your job, that makes you, you know, so like you have to prioritize taking care of yourself before you do anything else. And so, you know, like, I think it's super important to make money, but making money in a way that makes that you feel good about, that you feel is moral, that you feel is reasonable, you know? So we could charge more for our services.
Mm-hmm.
But then I wouldn't get to work with any small businesses.
Right.
And we don't believe in having different like levels of, like, you know, if you're IBM and you come to me, I'm not going to be like, oh, it's $1 million for the same thing. I would charge somebody else 100,000. Like we have a price list, and the price list is the price list. So we price everything in a way where we make a profit. And it's a good margin, but it's not absurd. Mm-hmm. It's not, you know, we're not doing what some companies do and add, you know, essentially adding, like, you know, this enormous margin for no work and no results.
And I think that door open. You're leaving the door open to that small guy, so he can still come in. And like you said, maybe he's got a $3,000 or $6,000
plan. Yep. Exactly. And then, you know, and I tell people right out of the gate, our smallest plan is $3,000 a month. Mm-hmm. If somebody comes on for $3,000 a month, I tell them day one, my goal is to get you to the point where you're 8 to 10K. And when you get there, you're going to be happy to pay it, because you're going to be so much bigger and so much more profitable that this will be a minuscule amount of money for you.
Mm-hmm.
So like I'm telling them straight up, this is what I want, because it's not really worth a lot for us to have somebody at 3K, but man, it's super fun.
It's super fun to get them to the 10K, you know, that's the whole thing. When you put your head down on the pillow at night, you can do it knowing, like you said, you didn't screw anybody, and you helped somebody.
Provided more value than was paid for. That's always the goal. If you give me $5,000, like, I want you to make 15.
Awesome.
So that you go like, hey, you know, I paid for my additional cost of goods, I paid for you, and I'm more profitable, you know? And so that's how we think about it, you know? And if you make 20, great. And if you make 25, great. And, you know, we've had some clients, and it's not a function of just us, right? It's a two-way street, but we have clients that are so impressive, and they just didn't know the blocking and tackling, that as soon as we give them an audience through, you know, advertising and some good filming, like, we've had clients with like 20, 30X returns. You know, where it's like they've gone instantly, you know, like they've instantly exploded, and they just didn't know how to do the basics. And so, like, you know, now that's not common. Common is, you know, 3 to 4X in the short term, you know, but super fun.
Yeah, it really does. It sounds like you know, you're definitely passionate about it, which I always like to, you know, when you hear somebody talk about something that they're passionate about, like you said earlier, you know, that idea of, if you do something you love, you don't work a day in your life. You know what? My father swung a hammer every single day. He loved it, but he came home with back pain and his elbow shot.
It's still work.
But you can see that you're passionate about this new project and what you're doing. And you've kind of blended in all these different things that you have done, you know, everything from BNN and all that kind of stuff. You can see how, you know, that idea of, okay, this is how we're going to market things. This is how we're going to talk about things. This is how we're going to help you. Yeah. This is the product we're going to put in front of you. You can see that you brought it all in from Ranger Up, from Range 15, all that.
Yeah.
And now you have a service to provide.
Yeah. And it's interesting, you know, only about 40% of our clients are veterans. I would have thought it was going to be more, but So it's been like, we have serviced people that do everything from like elite leadership consulting to diabetic socks to, it's so interesting, like the weird confluence of brands that we're working with right now. One of my favorite clients to work with is this guy. He is a vet. This guy, Lance Liggett, he owns a company called Thigh Huggers. You should actually talk to him. He'd be a good interview. He's a character. He owns a company called Thigh Huggers, and essentially they're Ranger panties, but with like interesting prints on them.
Okay.
And this guy, like, he lives this life. He's a bigger than life dude, like, mustache, mullet, but like super nice to everybody. Like just a really nice guy. Anyway, he's almost created this, like, just by being a nice guy and reaching out to people, he's created this little group of like firefighters, this one guy that's kind of in his little clique, and they're not like local to each other. This one guy that's kind of in his clique is a Canadian guy that makes like shades, you know, like over the top, like 80s style shades. And as a result of like meeting him, they're all starting to kind of be successful. And we've helped his company grow a lot, but like, he's a real talented guy, super fun to work with. And he's kind of like always introducing us to random people, like, oh, you should talk to Diesel Jack. You should talk to, because he believes in what we're doing. And
right.
Like, it's been really cool, but he would be a great interview. He's a character. I mean, just literally wears Ranger panties all day, every day, wherever he is.
I have a buddy who's kind of like that. And it's interesting when you see him because it's, you know, I'm in New York, man. It's 34 degrees. We're getting ready for 18 inches of snow this week, you know, and I wouldn't be surprised if I see him walking down the streets in Ranger panties in about 5 minutes. It will not surprise me. But it's crazy. It's crazy. Yeah. But I love talking to people like that. Anybody who, you know, who puts themselves out there and they come up with their idea and then they run with it and they commit. It's awesome.
it's fun watching it, man.
Yeah, man. Well, Nick, listen, I kept you for about an hour, man. And I really have enjoyed talking to you.
My pleasure.
You know, I you're somebody that I wanted to speak to, and thank you again for spending some time with us and going over not only Diesel Jack, but just in general, you know, how you got started and kind of your view on, you know, getting businesses going and what's important.
Yeah. My pleasure, man.
Thank you, sir. I appreciate it. You have a great day.
You too.
Thanks again to Nick for coming on the show and just spending an hour with us to talk about everything from how he got started to the new media company to, you know, just a little bit about what's going on in the world and some of the challenges that, you know, small businesses are facing right now. And if you're looking for a different idea on marketing, if you're looking for a different way to attack the expansion of your business, and like Nick said, you know, there's all different ways of doing that. Go over to dieseljackmedia.com. There's a place to get in contact with them, all of that. You can follow them on Instagram, Facebook, all of that. But head over to their website. You can watch some short videos. They talk about kind of their philosophy and their approach to marketing and whether or not you might be a good fit if you are that small business owner looking for, you know, a way to spice up your marketing campaigns. So please go over and support them. And as always, support Ranger Up. Head over there. There's still time before Christmas. Get your gift ideas in. Their shirts are still my favorite. Pogue Pride. I was attached to Special Forces. Great shirts. Awesome stuff. Also, their drinkware. I have a couple of their mugs. One of my favorites is it's a bunny, and it just says, "I'll cut you." I bring it into meetings, and I make sure I point it at people. And you know, half the time they don't even notice it until the last minute. It's great. You know, they just have awesome products. So head over to Ranger Up and, you know, get your last minute Christmas needs from them. I think that just about does it for this week. As always, please try to support the show a little bit. Go to your podcast provider, subscribe, leave a little review. That is the best way to support us, is leaving a review. It helps us get up the charts. It helps us keep getting great guests like Nick, which is really what we're trying to do. It's for you guys. It's so you get that information, and it gets you the best information that we can get for you. Little bit of news for next week. I'm planning on doing a little bit of a Christmas episode. I have a fun interview lined up. We're going to have a good time. Maybe we even have a couple midday drinks together and just really enjoy the Christmas season and the holiday season. So, again, thank you for joining us this week. And until next week, my name is Jason. And thank you for your service.